my beautiful people. Welcome to the Rolling More the Leicester Tigers fans podcast. Miserably without Elliot this week as he gallivants his way around Devon and North Wales before finishing his pilgrimage to Dublin next Saturday, where I will also be going. But I don't think I could be blamed for any loss that we're probably expected to incur there. So to step into the breach, we've got not just one, but two fantastic guests. We've got, I think we can call you now, Jess, Old Faithful. You're almost as experienced now on this podcast as Dan Cole is in terms of rolling out for Tigers on the tight head side. Jess Bunyard, long-standing friend of the pod, scrummaging Nors, and of course the host of the fantastic LTW Fancast, Leicester Tigers women's side Fancast, named by yours truly. I'll hasten to add. Jess, mate, how are you? It's fantastic to see you. You've already stepped into the breach for me once this season, and now it's Elliot's turn. How have you been?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm excited to get stuck into it. Excited to join you guys on the sister pod, the lesser pod, but excited to join you guys.
Absolutely not. I will not have it. The whole reason that the LTW Fancast was set up was so that it wouldn't be a secondary thing that we were trying to shove in, you know, in a 2-hour pod already, shove in, you know, 10 minutes talking about the women when they deserve their own pod. If you haven't checked it out yet, please do this to it because it's fantastic. And, you know, you think that we have perspective on difficult results. I think that you put us in the shade on that because it's been a bit of... maybe a down season to start with, but lots of positivity of late.
Yeah, well, it was kind of easier for us to talk about the early part of the season because you got the sense we were building. But then I found it quite difficult to talk about the Trailfinders home game after we had such highs about like pushing Saris, making them hit the Marley Packer panic button when they came to us, getting the win at Sale. And then I went to the home game against Trailfinders with such high hopes. And we disappointingly just sort of disintegrated a little bit. I think we were just a little bit too mentally and physically fatigued. So I found that the most difficult loss to talk about. But overall, I think the growth and the improvement in the squad in the first season of the PWR, I think is beyond what I expected. So I'm extra giddy.
Excellent, because I think that's it from my perspective looking in and obviously only seeing a few of the live games on telly, which has been depressingly few. There's been... It's like they're looking for an 80-minute performance still. There's always like 40 minutes, particularly against the big sides, where you're like, oh my gosh, we're in this. And actually, the amount that they're in games increases. I think there was against Saracens, wasn't it, where for 60 minutes, you know, it was toe-to-toe, where before, earlier in the season, it might be 20 minutes or so. So that is another positive, I think.
Yeah, you can almost say it's a sign of the club as a whole, because I think we're still searching for 80-minute performances from the men's side, and we're certainly still seeking that from the women's. I think this has highlighted the big step up that it is between Champ Rugby and the PWR. There's a big gulf, but I think the gulf is closing, and the team are working really hard to close that gap in terms of, I think it is just pure physical and mental fitness, like having the ability to play not just 80-minute games at Champ, but 80-minute games at PWR when you're playing against the likes of Marley Packer and Emily Scarrett is completely different, completely like mental and physical challenge, but they're certainly rising to it.
Yeah, I love Emily Scarrett. That's complete aside. I just need to put that out there. She's a bit of a backup wife for me. Again, she doesn't know that, and my wife doesn't really know that either, but... Just want to put that out there. Let's quickly chat about fantasy rugby. I forgot to change my team again this week. So in a ringing endorsement of my changes, I scored far better than I did the week I actually did make changes. So you'll all be delighted to hear. I've snuck up to 33rd in the leaderboard, which is still quite shit. But Matt Gilbert still running away with it. His league has been whittled away slightly, though. Matt Gilbert, 10, 2,619.5 points. And then we've got Jay... on 2,569.5 points. Well, I don't know where these half points come from. And Will F. Mayer at 2,551.5 points. So the gap has closed a little bit. Still plenty to play for. Of course, you can win a magnum of wine provided very kindly by Charnwood Vintners. Now, we're going to go and crack through the news in a second. We're delighted to say that the second guest I alluded to earlier is Charles Richardson of the Daily Telegraph. He's going to talk to us about the Newcastle game and look ahead to the very daunting fixture against Leinster. I need to recover from the chocolate coma from, you know, helpfully confiscating eggs from the Easter egg hunt because the kids were having too much chocolate. So I ate them all. I'm sure that's like a tale as old as time for dads and mums all over the country. But as always, if you want to get in touch with us, please do so. Our email address is therollingmall@outlook.com. Our Twitter handle is @rollingmallpod. And you can find our Facebook group, which confusingly has the same name.
Before we crack on, a quick thank you to our sponsors, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters, who are helping us put this all together. St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are a small team of coffee professionals, proudly born and bred in Leicester. Family owned and operated, they've been dedicated to perfecting the art of coffee roasting for the past 10 years, solely focused on sourcing, roasting and supplying some of the world's best specialty coffee to their customers across Leicestershire and the UK. They're passionate Tigers fans, and St. Martin's have long-standing connections with the club and are proud to help caffeinate the players and staff in their efforts on and off the pitch. In an effort to help the fans wake up on match days, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are offering 20% off all coffee when listeners use the code ROLLINGMALL, that's all one word, on their website. So visit stmartinscoffee.co.uk to stock up on locally roasted specialty coffee and use the code ROLLINGMALL, all one word, to save 20% off your next purchase. The news section is brought to you by Parish Brewery, who are offering you and your pub free beer. Now that I've got your attention, Parish Brewery award-winning ales are brewed in a 400-year-old converted stable block in Borough-on-the-Hill in rural East Leicestershire. It's here that they follow the traditional ways of brewing, using only the finest ingredients to brew their cask-conditioned beer. In addition to the many beer festival awards, the brewery is the proud recipient of a Guinness Book of World Records award in 1994 for having brewed the world's strongest beer at that time, Baz's Superbrew, and its offspring, Baz's Bonce Blower, is still going strong. Very strong, but absolutely delicious. So back to the free beer, Parish are offering you the chance to win four perfect pints of their ale to enjoy at your local. All you have to do is tell them on Instagram or Facebook what your favourite Parish flavour is. If you're yet to try one, you can check out which one will tickle your taste buds by visiting parishbrewery.co.uk. Not only will you win, but so will your pub, as they'll be gifted a free pin, and that's 36 delicious pints to you and I. So get on your socials, tell Parish your favourite flavour, and get a chance for some free beer. It's that easy. Participating pubs only. All entrants must be 18 or over. Full terms and conditions apply.
Right, time for a quick bit of beep, 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 beep news. And I'll tell you what, why don't we start with the stuff that we all hoped was an April Fool's today, but tragically looks like it's not. Leicester Tigers have paid a fine or an overspend tax, depending on who your media spin guy is. For us, it's an overspend tax. Again, relating to the catastrophic 2019-2020 season, that whole dogshit era of what looks now plain mismanagement. We'd already been fined for an overspend in that year, I believe, in March 2022. Another lot has come about now, and it looks like we overspent by £47,000. The thing is, given the competence and the way the club was run at the time, I don't think it was either terrible cheating because we were still shite, or, and I genuinely think this, it was rank incompetence because it really doesn't look particularly good. Either way, it does fall within the sort of overspend buffer, which is provided by the Premiership rugby rules and regulations, which are agreed by all clubs, including Saracens and a lot of their fans. You know, I suppose with some justification, getting a bit upset about it. So what that means is it doesn't actually count as sort of a cap breach to the point where they're going to start looking at points deductions. It means that we pay a fine, which, to be honest, the club could probably ill afford to pay at the moment. £47,000 was the overspend. I believe when you combine that to the amount that we overspent from previous findings, I think that we have to pay that back for £1 effectively that we've overspent. So another 47 grand hit. Cheers. Well done, everyone involved. That is disappointing. Jess, it's slightly worrying that stuff is still being dragged up. And for me, the biggest question now is, I hope that's it. We can just draw a line under it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on the line of view that I think it's, you know, it's just a bit of mismanagement. It's pleasing on the one aspect that stuff is still being found, because it means that accounts, hopefully across the league, are being thoroughly, thoroughly looked at in the way that they should. It makes me worried when we chat about rugby finances and mismanagement, and that we don't have the proper checks and balances in place for owners and management. I don't want any club to go down the path of Irish and Worcester and Wasps. So thorough checks are absolutely needed. but I hope this is the absolute last fine we see of a period that is going to go down in history as kind of gross mismanagement of the club, I think.
Yeah, it increasingly looks like that, doesn't it, on and off the pitch. And like you say, hopefully you could draw a line under it. And I think certainly that's what the Tigers statement has sought to do. And yeah, hopefully there won't be any other adverse findings relating to recencies. I don't think there will be. It does feel like a huge change. Coach changes taking place there. Right. Before we do a bit of women's Tiger Watch, which Jess is going to take us through, quick bit of injury news. Getting loads of mixed sorts of messages about Martin and Chesham and Rafael, whether they're injuries or resting. They'd obviously all had a pretty tough Six Nations. I've heard from one source that Martin was basically told, because he's been so relentlessly physical, even though he only played two games, but he had just come back from injury, it was deemed sensible to rest him for two games. And obviously he's had knee problems, and playing on a plastic pitch at the weekend would have been ideal. And we're going to ask him probably to be ludicrously physical, hopefully, against Leinster. So hopefully that's not an injury. Chesham, I think we all agreed, looked completely shagged despite working his socks off against Gloucester. So hopefully it's just a rest for him. The one thing I think do have some news on, unfortunately, is Joe Hayes. I think that's a calf strain, which I think could be anything from 4 to 6 weeks. And I suspect, well, obviously that will probably rule him out of Leinster. So Coley's going to have to do a lot of work. But hopefully, if everything goes very, very well, we might have him back for Northampton. But obviously, that will depend how rehab goes. Get well soon, Joe. Bit of Tiger Watch. And as I said to you before we hit record, my sin is that I only really watch the England women play. So basically, I can eulogise about Meg Jones, because she was sensational, as she always is for Tigers. Why don't you tell us a bit about how the Tigers ladies got on?
Yeah, look, I had a couple of Tigers players in my Fantasy Six Nations team this weekend. I seem to be having ups and downs on that team. I'm either picking really great players and they're having great moments, or I'm picking them in the fact that I can't drop them because they're 1 week in that competition. They're going to be playing amazing. But I know we can chat about Meg Jones, but for me, the big shout out the weekend goes to Ellis Martin, who got her first start for Scotland and got her first Six Nations try. Sadly, it was one of the only scores for Scotland, but to have her, she's been scoring tries for Tigers all season, and then to have her score a try for Scotland in the first Six Nations start, I think was amazing. So she's probably one to watch. She's like bolted on now, I think, for hooker in my fantasy league team. But yeah, Bartlett also as well is smashing it at loose head props.
Was it a traditional rolling maul try for a hooker?
Yeah, I missed that first part of the game, but yes, I think so. She's been scoring rolling maul tries for us, and she's fantastic. She came on the LTW fancast. We interviewed her, and she's a legend. She was really easy to chat to. She's a proper character. She likes all of our tweets as well, so that probably makes us extra biased. But I was really pleased to see her.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod, Ellis Martin. But yeah, so I think probably my Tiger Watch moment of the weekend was seeing her on Twitter light up and score those tries, score that try, and it's fantastic to see her hard work rewarded. Yes, she got that start in place because there was a sadly injury to Scotland's first choice hooker, but hopefully she can use this period to really kind of put her name on that starting jersey.
Okay, let's talk about the longest game in the world, a win away at Newcastle, which I know that there's been a lot of complaints. I think if you look at our recent performances at Newcastle, I'll take any win away in Geordieland. 19 points to 13, final score. Got through five pairs of pants, got through more pants than Tigers got through props in that game. But here's to help us look over it and preview the Leinster game coming up. We've got Charles Richardson of the Daily Telegraph, obviously another long-standing friend of the pod, we can now say, and he's looking resplendent, let me tell you. That beard is looking beautifully manicured, and he is wearing a very sexy shirt. Hello, Charles.
What an introduction. Hello, good evening, everybody, or good morning, whenever the pod goes out.
Good evening, good morning, and good night. Yes, that's it. We're there at all times of the day. Mate, how are you? Good? You're busy at this time with Six Nations and fitting back now into the grind of the Premiership in Europe?
Yeah, I don't quite think I've recovered from Six Nations yet. It was a real slog. Obviously, a great privilege to do this job, and I love it, but it can, let's just say, by the time that England-France game was finished, I was ready for that tournament to be over.
You were ready to go and do one of your articles on French lower league rugby, were you?
Yes. Yeah. Shameless plug. If anybody wants to read about my trip to Bayonne in the top 14, it's on the Telegraph Sport pages at the minute.
Excellent. Yeah, well worth a read because it does make you very envious of two things. One, the French domestic rugby system, and two, Charles's job. So it's fantastic. Right, let's get into Newcastle. I'm going to start with this quite holistic high view, and I'm going to throw it to you first, Jess. The response to a win in Newcastle has been varied, shall we say. And I find that this season, more than any, I've seen just people going at either end of the spectrum. And the one that seemed to come out of this one more was despair, because Newcastle have been hopeless. We have to remember, of course, though, that they're a different side under Steve Diamond. They extra struggled to put them away, only put away four tries past them at home. I think they won a friendly against Sale, didn't they? But both sides were reasonably stacked for that. And you could tell that there was a difference in them. And the circumstances of it as well, I think, meant that, you know, you'd be very grateful to get away with a win. What was your overarching sort of feeling coming out of it? Was it one of being pissed off that we haven't got the try bonus point, which is a theme this season? Or was it, you know what, it's Newcastle away. In our title-winning season, we really struggled against them away. Last season, we got absolutely trashed by them away. Does it sit with you?
Relief that we've got the win. I think any side that is coached by Steve Diamond, they're going to get themselves amped up for certain fixtures. And I felt like Newcastle got themselves amped up to us. They were targeting the win. So I think leaving a side coached by Steve Diamond disappointed that they haven't got a win, I'm certainly pleased with that. Look, getting a try bonus point away from home, going anywhere, is always going to be a struggle. So getting a win, I'm happy.
Leaving Steve Diamond with a face like a dog's bottom is always a treat, to be honest, particularly given how he was spouting off before the game. Charles, I know that you're sort of Leicester born and bred, but you've learned to put a more neutral hat on. Where was your sort of feelings following that game? I know that you've watched the extended highlights of it since.
Yeah, so I was at Saints on Friday night, which was an absolutely cracking game.
Yeah, it looked like it was a different game, to be honest.
A much different game that finished far, far earlier, and I was desperately trying to find out what was going on at Kingston Park in the media room afterwards. So no, I've seen the hour highlights package that TNT Sports do of the Leicester game. Two interpretations, really, sort of two wildly differing interpretations, a very strange one. You know, on the face of it, I think most Leicester fans would be disappointed with such a narrow victory at Kingston Park against a team yet to win this season, against a team who really are playing for nothing. And especially with so much on the line at the minute and with how tight the league is, who knows how crucial it might be to not get that winning bonus point. However, on the flip side, it's one of the all-time great defensive stands, isn't it, in the history of Premiership rugby, to hold out a team, especially with the speed that they've got on the wing. I know they're not a team to particularly write home about, but you know, you would have expected Newcastle, with the likes of Adam Radwan on the wing, to find enough space 10, 15 metres out from the Leicester line
with
to get that winning
advantage.
Try with a three-man advantage, precisely. And I think to hold them out under those circumstances was a genuine achievement. And something that they should be very, very proud of. It was probably the preceding 80 minutes where the lion's share of the analysis should take place. But you know, it's going to go one of two ways now, isn't it? They can either use that incredible last 15 minutes where they showed incredible grit and heart
and intelligence, I would say, as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
A huge amount of brain to be able to defend all that extra space.
No, precisely. And with their backs to the wall, you know, that should, you know, for Leicester fans, touching wood, be a catalyst for bigger and better things moving forward. There is also the fear with how sort of inconsistent Leicester have been this season at times that, you know, it could be a bit of a flash in the pan. But that sort of thing, you know, that sort of grit and that sort of heart, you know, you can't really coach that in a way. And that, you know, there's a real sort of inherent, you know, property there that they should be working to bottle, really. Because, you know, if they've got that and if they can show that in that last 15 minutes, then there is something there. There is something special there. And it's just about, I think, distilling that and sort of using that to move forward. Okay, the attack was a bit clunky at times, but the defense has been criticized a lot this season, and I think it was absolutely outstanding in that last 15 minutes. I mean, it really was.
I think the defense, for me, the phase defense by and large this season has been pretty good. Discipline of late is a different question, and so is I think first phase defense, as we saw, is still sometimes a little bit questionable. I'm going to start with a positive. It's sort of a bit of a shit sandwich, really, because they do a few good things and then perhaps talk about some of the bad things in the middle, finish with the good bit. So, good thing first, JVP scores first try. He's back starting. Charles, he looked super sharp. That service was a step up to, I would say, most, not just any nine at Leicester, but most nines in the league. And the acceleration of the base, the big fear, of course, that when he's had an injury as bad as he had, and it's not been a smooth recovery process, as we understand, that he would have lost half a yard of pace. But the acceleration to go through a gap 30 metres out and then round the fullback with a beautiful step and swerve was fantastic. Just how impressed were you with him, and how important is he to Tigers going forward?
Very to both of those questions. I think, I'm not sure there are many scrum halves in England who would score that try. Just the instinct, the awareness, the peripheral vision, and then the explosive pace, and then the strength as well. Because I think he brushes off a tackler to start off with, and then rounds the fullback with brilliant agility. I mean, if he carries on playing like that, he will definitely go on that New Zealand tour in the summer, where, touch wood, you know, he stays fit and he doesn't have another sort of horrible injury, and also. I think it is a real, real bonus for Leicester in this run-in that he is back fit. Tom Whiteley has showed some lovely touches, but I think JVP has proven and will continue to prove that he's a sort of a cut above, really. But he's an international quality nine, so he should be, you know?
That's it. Well, quality is quality, isn't it? It wasn't just his attack that, and I agree with your point about his strength, because you forget he's not a small gut bloke. He looks quite slight in one sense, but he's quite tall, and he does have that sort of like that power to get through. And Jess, I was talking about the other aspect of his game that caught my eye was his defence, and actually being quite aggressive in the contact, but also he showed a couple of nice points where he flies out, he sort of loops round that sort of Exocet missile role where he comes rushing out and he almost provides the rush, and it's a slightly different defensive set that Tigers run with. That, were you impressed with his defense as well?
Yeah massively so. Really impressed with his work rate, really impressed with his defense. Amazing to see him back, to be honest. The right boost at exactly the right time. It's really pleasing for me to see those flying out, one or two people flying out occasionally just to cut off the wide pass, or to put the person who's receiving the wide pass or trying to execute the wide pass under pressure. It's something I've seen from us in the past couple of weeks, and I think it's really proven. I think it did stop Newcastle getting a lot of pace on the wing, which was obviously really important.
I've seen a few people, it sort of ties to the defence, because I thought, again, Newcastle didn't actually, apart from their first phase try, didn't really cut through us a lot. The defence, by and large, was pretty good. And I've seen people say, oh, you know, the conditioning didn't look great. And I actually thought it looked like a heck of a step up from Gloucester, which I think is a relief, because there were two options, as Elliot and I discussed last week, which was that basically we ballsed up that six-week window and we weren't fit. And the option two, which was preferable and now seems more likely, is that there was a run of a bug that went through the camp, because Dan Kelly apparently was playing through illness. You know, Hazy was ill. Pollard obviously was withdrawn due to the flu. So it looks now it might be more than illness. Did anything jump out at you, Jess, about the conditioning? I thought the kick chase looked a bit more on point than it was before. Still perhaps not at its best, though.
Yeah, I'm getting a bit frustrated with our exits, though. I'm getting a bit frustrated in the way we're always exiting the same. Like, you can see us go, oh, exit, and now it's time to box kick. And I'm getting a little bit frustrated with that. I accept the traits that we're trying to force chaos and attack through that. But we overplayed our hand at Gloucester, and there was temptations at time at Newcastle where we overplayed our exit again. But going back to the positive, I thought our conditioning was really good. And I don't think we can speak about defence without shouting out Ollie Hassel-Collins, who defended on his wing and looked absolutely superb by forcing people and moving the attackers into the right space where he wanted them to go. Yeah. He didn't let them dictate. He completely dictated to them. And I thought he was outstanding in that.
I think something that sort of like jumped out at me a little bit, I suppose, with in terms of the conditioning, is firstly, you don't win a game, a 100-minute long game, when you're three men down by being poorly conditioned. And I thought that was quite impressive. The one thing, though, I suppose, that does jump out at me still, though, Charles, is the first phase defence. Remember when we played Saracens at home and we were saying the defence was all over them in phase play. Kelly rushes up at the right point, gets an intercept and stuff in that game. But we got torn apart about two, maybe three times off first phase. And this one, again, is first phase. And it's also the same channel, I think, that they seem to target, which is the connection off a line out between the open side, which was Rafael in the Saracens game, Cracknell here, and Pollard. And there seems to be a bit of a communication issue there where Pollard sometimes steps in because he's not convinced that the seven will be there. We end up with two men on the same guy, and that's where those gaps appear. Do you think you fix that? I mean, because if it keeps happening, are they just not getting it?
Yeah, that is a good question. There's also the Cata link with sometimes it's 13 and sometimes with 10. I think teams have identified a little bit that he likes to bite up. And I think that first Newcastle try went straight through that channel, didn't it? I think it went straight between
it was 12
and 13.
It was the nightmare sort of scenario of Cata stepping up and Pollard stepping in because he wasn't convinced Cracknell was going to come across.
So yeah.
Crackers and Polly end up on one person. Cata's shot up and then, you know, to hit the guy running behind. And then you've got this, like you say, you've got this lovely wraparound move, but it's far too easy.
I mean, it is curable. The only thing I will say is that that must be about the first time that Pollard, Cata and Scott have started a pro match together. They can't have done it that often.
I think it was Scotty's injury record this season. That's probably about right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the defence, as you mentioned there, the defence has looked slightly more watertight when Dan Kelly's been there. But Matt Scott is a very good defender. In fact, really, in sort of what he made his name on, really, before he came to Leicester. And then he seemed to add a little bit more to his game with the ball in hand. And I think they just need time, a bit like a worn out record here, because that's what we've been saying for the entire Six Nations with England, and just saying, you know, be patient, they need time. Well, I think it might be the same with Leicester, except for with Leicester, the time is running out a little bit, isn't it? But I suppose these two next weekends, well, probably one weekend, let's be honest, but I'm sure we'll come on to that. This next one weekend is a good chance to sort of, you know, iron out the creases a little bit in a sort of a bit of a free hit, you'd say. And I know we're going to come on to it, so I don't want to jump the gun. But you know, if he plays the same midfield again, then that's another game under their belt against what is likely to be world class opposition heading into that Saints away game, and the defence there will have to be improved. It will have to be a step up, because I think Saints, they have got weaknesses, Northampton, but attacking with the ball is certainly not one of them.
Nice segue there, Charles, into attack, because in that first half, we do get another try from Rolling Maul, which is nice to see. Julio Montoya back on the score sheet after a while. He seemed to have passed over Rolling Maul responsibilities for a while. I think we had three against Gloucester, and he wasn't on the end of any of them. So it's good to see him back on the score sheet. I was slightly annoyed, actually, though. I have to admit, well, I think at the end of the first half, we had a couple of 5-metre lineouts, didn't we? And the patience didn't seem to be there. There was a bit of disorganisation in how we were sort of pushing through, so that was frustrating. But it all comes down to the same sort of story, again, of attack. Charles, will come to you first on this. This is where the absence of the attack coach at Tigers has felt so keenly. Because I tend to think we look quite slick and quite good for three phases, which is basically your launch play. Most launch plays are probably 2 to 3, 4 max phases. And then when we have to start sort of playing off the cuff, where you should still have natural structures that you fit into, that an attack coach will build in, that's when we seem to run out of ideas pretty pronto. Did that stand out to you? Because there were times when we looked really, really good. But then, of course, when we start grinding through the gears, we don't seem to have anywhere else to go.
No, it stood out all season. They really need to get the situation with the attack coach, with Alan Dickens, sorted out. Obviously, we don't really know what's going on there, but he's not currently working as attack coach at Leicester Tigers. And Matt Smith has stepped up, but he's stepped up from the academy. He doesn't have frontline attack coach experience, although he's clearly learning on the job pretty quickly. It has been an issue all season. I thought Harlequins away, just before the Six Nations, Leicester might have turned a corner a little bit. You know, regarding the attack, regarding creation and identification of space, and actually a bit more organisation on the phases. Certainly in the second half. The first half was a little bit staccato,
playing wide quite a lot.
Yes, yeah, I remember. I remember that. You know, Ollie Hassel, I think that was probably Ollie Hassel Collins' best game in a Leicester shirt, frankly. I think he was man of the match. And it's a good sign when your wing is being named player of the match, because it means he's touching the ball and that's what you want. You want your dangerous runners touching the ball as much as often in space that you've created for them. But then it did seem a little bit of a backward step in the Premiership Rugby Cup in both matches in terms of the attack.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, certainly Gloucester. And, well, I think Ealing as well, really. I mean, I know it was a bit of a tricky one, Ealing, because they were really up for it and they got the upper hand at set piece, didn't they? So it can be quite difficult to build anything meaningful when you're in retreat there. But certainly Gloucester. And then Gloucester at home as well, the attack looked a little bit clunky. And I do think that JVP coming back will help this, because I don't Pollard, for all of his strengths, I don't necessarily think he's that sort of George Ford conductor of a fly half. He's a very good rugby player. He's strong. He's a strong ball carrier. He's got a vicious pass on him, and he's obviously a very good kicker. But he's not quite a conductor. I think he's benefited a lot at international level from having someone like Faf de Klerk or Kobus Reinach, two very experienced scrum halves, very intelligent scrum halves, very quick scrum halves, and also a brutish pack in front of him. And I think that with him having JVP there, who likes bossing, it likes stamping his authority on the game, I think all of a sudden we might see a little bit more direction from Tigers. And I think Leicester have missed JVP, and I think his influence, well, as we've already alluded to, I think his influence has probably gone under the radar a little bit. And I think he's been missed maybe more than we realise.
I think that's a really good point. And of course, the fact that he hits the fringes as well, that slows the drift, as we all know. And
yeah,
if it doesn't, you know, kind of, if they do drift quickly, then he's gone straight through. I think what the thing that perhaps annoyed me a little bit, well, I was happy to see us go for it, but it was almost like we caught ourselves by surprise with it, Jess, was we obviously spotted that there was potentially a bit of an opportunity to attack almost with the pick and go, like they would leave a bit of a wider guard. Perhaps worried about JVP. And I think on two or three occasions, we picked and went through the middle, 5-10 meter break. And then, you know, kind of that nobody's really there supporting, and we get turned over. That's slightly irritating, isn't it? Because you'd have thought that if that's spotted before, you'd hope guys would be on their toes to be able to clear out quickly and secure that and make the most of those breaks.
Yeah, you'd hope so. Look, ruck speed is something I look at when I get the stats sent through from the PWR for the women's team, because if you've got a quick ruck, chances are your attack is on point and you're singing. That takes great discipline from the forwards and anybody else who's there to get there. Also, there's an opportunity for you to receive a pass if you're running close to somebody's shoulder. I'm getting a little bit frustrated with our attack. It's great in the opposition 22 area. Once we get past maybe the ability or thinking of different ways to exit, and it's not always a box kick and it's different ways to exit, we're fine. We're okay. From my perspective, we're starting to string together a little bit more flow and attack. But then we get to sort of the opposition five or their try line, and it goes very narrow again. And then there's a couple of picks and goes from the forward pack, but then we're not really sure what else to do with it. If it doesn't create space, we look a bit lost. And then if it does create space, we don't quite know how to execute that space. So it's just pick and go. And then we don't get over the score line. So I think we're really getting good at flowing attack before we get to the opposition five. And then it just goes very narrow, very repetitive, and the ball's turned over. So I'm getting a bit frustrated when we get to their five.
Charles and I have exchanged messages. Sorry, Charles, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think probably the exact same thing that you were going to say is that, you know, we've discussed about how predictable it all is sometimes. And I do think, as I said, not wanting to harp on about it, but JVP coming back just to put that slight element of doubt into the defence, into those guards at the ruck, into those bodyguards, just keeping them honest, keeping them a little bit more, keeping them true, will, I think, immediately, there'll be an immediate knock-on effect of that, in that we will look less predictable without even trying. I think the forwards can run the same lines that they're running now, but all of a sudden, if the defence is concerned about a JVP snipe, they're bunched close to the ruck. There's going to be more space between the defenders and the defensive line, so they can run the same lines, but instead of running into bodies, they might run into arms, get Leicester onto the front foot, and then they'll sort of, you know, there's going to be space out wide.
You make those first two or three traffic meters, as we call them, and actually sometimes the rest of the attack looks after itself. And, you know, goodness knows, Charles and I have exchanged a lot of messages expressing, shall we say, confusion at why we seem to exclusively use Jasper in this traffic carrying capacity, when we know he's a heck of an athlete, he's quick, and just the difference between Mercer last week for Gloucester and Jasper for Leicester, two exceptional number eights. But the difference is how they were used, and that you would have sometimes Mercer, you know, as the, you know, the one out carrier running into traffic. That's fine, and he can do that. And, you know, we saw he was bloody effective at it. But you also saw him in wider channels. You saw him on kick returns. I just love to see Jasper used. You know, he's probably our most devastating ball carrier. I think that you take away a lot of his strengths when you make his positioning predictable. If all of a sudden you're like, right, watch out, one out, two out, here comes Jasper, we know where he's going to be. You put bodies in the way, you're going to stop even a bloke as effective as him. If all of a sudden you're like, hang on, what the fuck's he doing in the 13 channel? Hang on, why is he returning this kick looking like an angry horse sprinting towards me? You're going to create confusion and doubt in defences. And I just wish we would look at that as being something else to do. Now, I think just one thing on the attack, we've got to go give kudos where we've given credit for an absolutely wonderful try by Ollie Hassell-Collins, which was a really nice setup play where we saw Stewart come round with lovely hands, and he has the intelligence as well. So I think if he stops flat there, that looks like a suspicious pass. I think it was pretty flat, but because he runs forward, after passing it, it suddenly doesn't look suspicious at all, and you'd get very few complaints about it. Then you've got that lovely outside arc of Shilcock. That's obviously what he brings, just that bit of extra pace, gets around the edge, and a good finish by Hassell-Collins, and one that you'd expect him to finish as well, guy with his strength and speed. That was good to see, though, wasn't it, Jess? That was sort of a sign that there is life in this attack.
Yeah, I'm thinking about our attack and then who we might play, but an attack backline that's got JVP, Pollard and Shilcock starts to sound quite exciting in terms of what we can do and where we can distribute the ball. So I would like to see a bit more of those three players all on the park at the same time, because I think it starts to get a little bit exciting. And every time Shilcock is on the park, but he's not at 10, he's somewhere out on the wing, absolutely causing chaos and either scoring a try or creating a try. So I'd like to see him, Pollard and JVP all on at the same time.
Well, we're going to come to that, I'm sure, in the Leinster game, because probably a similar conundrum that Borthwick has had for England, I expect, about what different fullbacks offer. And I think it's particularly the case when you've got a fly half like Pollard. I think arguably, you know, it's less essential when you've got a fly half like Ford or Smith. But certainly someone like Pollard, I think, having another distributor like Shilcock helps. Hey, look.
I have a question for you.
I'll go for it, Charles.
You'll have watched him slightly more detail over the past 2 weeks. Do you think that Freddie Stewart over the past two weekends has looked like he's been trying to show a little bit more vision, put other people, bring other people into the game more than historically he might have done, after obviously being dropped for George Furbank of the Six Nations, who is a fullback, who is, you know, in a completely different mould to Stewart, somebody who is basically a secondary fly half almost. I mean, he's played fly half for England, George Furbank. Do you think that has been noticeable in Freddie Stewart's game? I thought that maybe against Gloucester a couple of times, I saw him doing things that I don't think we'd have seen from Freddie Stewart last season.
I think for me, Jess, I'll throw it to you in a second as well, because for me, I actually thought when he got Drogs, his game against Wales actually was probably one of his best attacking displays. And he was probably England's most threatening back, you know, that first carry where he goes through. And he carried that on against Gloucester. What I quite liked is that rather than just running it straight back, he has this sort of like wide ranging sort of runway. He'll run laterally a bit, look for a weakness, which I don't think he's done before. I think he's relied on his size, say, well, look, I can take on a second row in contact because I'm a big boy. But he's actually now looking to say, okay, there's a centre, there's a prop. I'm going to go and accelerate through that gap because whilst his pickup speed isn't the best, his leg strength through contacts during that acceleration process helps him make those half breaks. And he certainly made a loss. And you do lose a bit of that when he comes in at wing, but that's where we need to perhaps get a bit creative in how we bring him back into it, because I still think he could be a threat. And we still saw it in bits against Newcastle. And those hands were lovely because that was under pressure and that was knowing where the space is. And that was exciting.
Yeah. Look, I almost wonder, is it a bit of like survivor bias that now we're on the lookout for Freddie doing these sorts of things, we're now noticing that he's doing these sorts of things more? I don't know, because I don't have the stats to hand, but I like the way he carries into contact. I do like the fact if he's trying to add like a bit of more distribution, a bit of passing, a bit of stuff like that to his gameplay. I think it's the absolutely right time in his career to be pushed on to the next level, to be stretched in order to do that. I wouldn't have necessarily dropped him and had Furbank, but that's probably because I'm a massive Freddie Stewart fan. But I do like, if it's the fact that we wanted to add to his career, add to the way he plays, then it's certainly the right time in his England career, international career to do that. I know, because I saw him on the walk around after the Gloucester game, he looked absolutely gutted, beyond gutted. In the Prem game a couple of weeks back, and I was just a bit worried about how he was taking on the kind of wanting to improve and wanting to get better and whether he was doing almost too much of that. So as long as it's managed by the club, as long as it's managed by Steve Borthwick and that we're challenging him in the right way, then I'm perfectly happy to see him add more strings to his bow.
I was impressed with him against Gloucester, I've got to say. I think he went to the road. I think he had one mistake and then the rest of it was pretty good. The interesting thing, obviously, with the England games was whenever Furbank did something, whether it was positive or negative, you instinctively think, would that have happened with Stewart? And I think I came to the conclusion, I don't think we'd have scored the first try with Stewart. I think he would have at least scored or set up the try Furbank scored. And then I don't think he would have messed up with that, you know, a couple of the drops and the, I think when he messed up in touch. But anyway, Jess, I could tell that you're like absolutely itching to talk about scrums. And look, we were on the, it's fair to say in the Newcastle game, we were on the back foot. Obviously, it doesn't help. You're starting your third choice tight-head, who's just come back from a 2-month layoff. And Will Hurd is a much, much improved player, but he didn't look completely at his best, and that's a measure of my respect for him because I think he is a really solid scrummager, but he didn't look at his best. Cronin, as we said, probably hasn't hit the heights of last season, but he did come back on and play a pretty crucial role. What was your thoughts on what's, you know, kind of, it was a little bit of an edge to Newcastle in the first half, and then when the subs came on, mainly, you know, Dan Richardson, you know, he's done a fantastic job against Quinns where he really helped lock us out, but he was under a heck of a lot of pressure, wasn't he?
Yeah, we were under pressure all the way through in the pack, really. I'm going to talk about two things. I'm going to talk about scrummaging on a plastic pitch and how if you're Tigers, if you're Dan McKellar and you haven't got a square bit of plastic pitch to practice scrummaging on week in, week out so that you're ready for these sorts of games, I think you're missing a trick because it takes a stud or doesn't take a stud differently to grass or to hybrid. And secondly, if you're on a plastic pitch and you're not getting the same traction, you're not able to dig your studs in enough, then Newcastle are going to target that as they did by, for me, chasing their feet or certainly early shoving, which definitely helped them keep the pressure on and didn't help us because we certainly weren't able to get or survive an initial nudge because they were shoving well before the ball came in my opinion. Yeah, so yes, it's a worrying frustration for me that we got driven backwards so easily. But bearing in mind all that you've said about it's not our first choice props, it's certainly not my first choice tight head. I thought they played pretty well under those circumstances. I do worry about pressures being applied to referees to speed up the game. Therefore, almost every scrum that goes backwards, even if it goes backwards straight, is now automatically a penalty. And I don't want to call out any one ref in particular because I've seen it a lot this season, but it's almost an effort to speed up the game and sort of appease people who don't like scrums. Who are you?
you're calling them out right now. Yeah.
Like, I don't think every scrum that goes straight backwards is a penalty. It's just you losing the fight that is that scrum. So there was a lot of things at play there for me. Not all of them within our power. But as I say, if we haven't got a bit of Astro or 3G already at Oval Park, we need to get a square bit for next season and get props perhaps in scrummaging on them so they know what it's essentially like to scrummage on sand.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point.
It's a good point. And also, I think that you've hit the nail on the head with scrums going backwards not necessarily being a penalty all the time. And I think there were certainly a couple that I saw in that Newcastle-Leicester game where Leicester were just going backwards, Newcastle were going forward. And actually, in that situation, Carl Dixon, who was the referee at the time, would probably have been better off just asking Newcastle to use it or just letting the scrum continue and seeing what happened rather than awarding the penalty. But yeah, I also think that the scrummaging scenario and the scrummaging situation and landscape is completely different if George Martin and Ollie Jessen play.
I think that
helps you if there is an early shove or you feel yourself going backwards. Having the oomph in the locks certainly helps that drive and also just boost your confidence as a prop. You know you've got that shove coming from behind you. I think it almost benefited us in a weird way having the swaps in the front row that we had due to the yellow card. So when Charlie Clare came on because there was a yellow card, he'd obviously picked off stuff chatting to the coaches or chatting to the water carriers or just from watching stuff to then come on, which meant we got a nudge when he came on and we almost didn't win that scrum, but we held our own for that time. But I think in a weird way, the yellow cards, whilst not helping us in one sense, helped us in another in the fact that people went off, looked at what was happening in a scrum, had a breather for 10 minutes and then came back on again. Right, I'm armed with information now. What else can we do to hold out this game?
I think the scrums became very interesting. I saw a lot of people slagging Carl Dixon, which is quite, it's quite low-hanging fruit, to be honest. But I didn't think he had too much of a bad game. I thought that there were a lot of the times, for example, when the scrums went down, I thought, oh, he's going to ping us. And he was just like, no, play away because there's nothing clear there. And I thought, that's fair enough. And I thought I think though the big thing for me is, once you start going backwards, there's a picture in the ref's head. And there was one particular, I think, to be fair to Dixon, he let it play away, but you heard the linesman shouting green, green, green. And I looked at it and I was like, in what universe was that Richardson? Because you could actually see the Newcastle guy loses bind hinge and he goes down first. He's clearly the first person to go down. But that just shows that once, effectively they're only looking for one side to ping. And it was actually my other point was I thought Jimmy Whitcomb had a really positive impact when he came on. He was very unlucky to be the one to get the yellow card. I think it was his only one he was penalised for, and he got done for driving across, which, as we all know, is a fairly contentious decision because, who goes first, tie head or the loose head. But I have to say he won an absolutely critical penalty for us by getting underneath his opposite number. And I thought he was excellent. And then Cronin, when he came on, I thought really tried to sort of push that as well. I think, again, he got done a couple of times for going across, but he kept at it, kept attacking, because he knew that the onus was on him to keep attacking. And I thought, again, the way they carried on attacking and trying their best to basically disrupt, I thought was really, really impressive.
Yeah, Whitcomb's an excellent scrimmager. I'd like to see him given a go, actually, in the starting side with Montoya and Cole, and not just coming on and having to sort of, clean up somebody else's mess, really. Given the chance to sort of have a go at someone and establish a bit of scrum dominance with Montoya and Hayes or Cole and the full sort of starting back five behind him. And I agree on Carl Dixon, actually, especially with all the chaos that was unfolding in the last, 19 minutes that ended up being played, I was really impressed with how composed he kept, you know, when it could, you know, it's been a really rough ride the past two weekends for officialdom in the Premiership, and for him to keep his cool when it was pretty chaotic,
quite self-inflicted.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. But you know, we can't sort of be so naive as to think that, you know, that's not going to have an effect on the referees, and that they might feel under greater pressure. And you know, with pressure, sometimes people can do strange things. And it was a very strange ending, a very chaotic ending. And I thought he kept pretty composed, and in the end, he gave an absolutely stonewall match-winning penalty to Leicester.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought actually on that as well. There was one where I thought we were a bit unlucky. I think Wellesley or Hatherall looked to get over the ball, and it was on those borderline.
Yes.
And he said it wasn't releasing, and he doubted, was he the tackler? Wasn't he the tackler? It was one of those ones, which is 50-50.
It was Wells.
Wells, yeah. But never got a problem with a ref kind of giving a 50-50 kind of against us. But that was fine. But I think the thing that we touched on there, that the more frustrating thing for me was discipline. And it's become a bit of a thing. Stupid penalties, bad, poor decisions. And that's what's cost us against Gloucester in the cup final. It's what cost us in part as well against Gloucester at the end. We gave away poor penalties, which made it's a lot more challenging to defend that lead we got in the last 10 minutes. We had things like a mall not really going anywhere, and Will Hurd clatters into somebody's legs and brings the whole thing down. Charlie Clare, I mean, he's a bit unlucky, but there's a cross there between Ilioni not recognising at the end there. I think it was the penalty that started the rot. We're on a warning. Ilioni goes to the ball, and if you're on a warning, you've got to make sure that it's crystal clear that there isn't anyone else on the other side, and Charlie's there and hasn't managed to roll away quick enough. And those are the sorts of things that were so frustrating. The discipline, particularly against a side like Leicester, has got to be better, hasn't it, Jess?
Yeah, in that situation, it's just that scanning before you hit the rock as a jackler. Is everybody out of the way? I've got to present a really crystal clear image here to the referee at all times, but especially when we're on a warning. So scanning, can I see any Leicester shirts? No, then go. Discipline is getting frustrating. And it's getting frustrating, as you say, because there's just like stupid penalties. I wouldn't mind if we were being like really, really brutish. And
when we're on our own line and doing stuff like that, you know, kind of desperate times and all that. But some of it is just like, particularly when your defence, by and large, is doing its job, you're just doing it for the opposition.
I know, it's just like, well, are we wanting to put ourselves under pressure, like, deliberately? It seems like, are we wanting to give away penalties and then, like, defend under absolute pressure, like, under hell or high water? I don't know, it must be now, because we're giving away so many penalties. It's, you know, as I say, I wouldn't mind if there were penalties, like you say, on our five or on our penalties because we were being a bit brutish in the first 20 minutes and wanted to say, this is our game. We're going to rough you up. You're not going to have an easy ride. I wouldn't mind those sorts of things. I wouldn't mind, you know, borderline flanker penalties in the first 20 minutes.
You wouldn't mind borderline assault as long as it lets it sound a marker. Leave really loud and clear. Let's just finish on a positive then. The nice crust of, say, the shit sandwich. But I think, Charles, you mentioned at the start that the work actually they did when they were down to 13, down to 12, etc., I thought was absolutely outstanding. The bravery, the dedication, the intelligence then not to go for, you know, those 50, you know, not to go for those clear sort of, you know, we got to just get penalised again situations, because we could have given away more penalties close to the line. And if they had a scrum 5 metres out, we're into penalty try territory. So there was a heck of a lot of desire, a heck of a lot of intelligence there. Fantastic steal, dual steal at the end by Visa and Khan Duff as well, who was playing on one leg and, you know, deserves a shout out as well. Boy, he looks like a player for the future, if not now. That was a massive encouragement, wasn't it? And they deserve to celebrate. I saw somebody say that was a shame to see us celebrating that. They should be celebrating that. That was a heck of a way to win a game.
Well, it is incredibly bittersweet, probably more sweet than bitter, because as I said at the start of the show, you know, that is probably not the result that Leicester fans would have wanted playing away at Newcastle. But then in terms of the context of the match and how it played out, Leicester fans would have been completely within their rights to be jumping up and down and celebrating a massive win in terms of the context of the game and all of the cards and the chaos at the end. They would be crazy to not embrace some of that positivity. They'd be crazy to not embrace some of that positivity. Obviously, there is things to work on and things that can be improved, but they have to take, as I said, they have to distill some of that into next weekend, into the most almighty challenge in Dublin. And now they're heading into that game. Okay, yes, Leicester are in seventh, but they're 3 points off fourth. That's it. It's so tight.
Three points off fourth, 5 points off second, and we've got the same win rate as the team in second. Eight wins, six losses. Just going to show bonus points, you know, coming down to it. But as I said before, I'm going to be loath to blame bonus points where there are games that Tigers should have won, but they didn't show up for. I think those are going to be the ones that stand out more. Those are four-point chunks that were given away. Anyway, we're going to go to some three-word reviews now. Dan Harwood, I suppose harshly, but possibly accurately for parts of the game, at least, says spirit over substance. Yes.
But I don't think sometimes that's a bad thing. I think sometimes in rugby we can overcomplicate, over systems, overplay things, over process. So if that's a three-word review, it's not as harsh as maybe I expect you're going to hit me with some that are going to be extra harsh.
Oh, I've got to filter some out. Ian Morton, see friends of the podcast, new underpants, please. which I think probably sums up exactly how all of us felt. And you'll have to give me just a second as I go through the cesspit that is X. Got one here from Dave King, who sort of puts the word B in brackets, but to try and siphon in a fourth one, a fourth word. But he says dimes must be spewing. But which, you know, is blatantly four letters, but we'll let it go, four words, but we'll let it go, because I have to admit, when there was talk about the reason he lost, and he alluded to Tigers players coming on before the 10-minute period was a lot. I did think maybe that was the case with one, but I actually think Charlie Clare was off longer. I think he was off for about 16, 18 minutes. Obviously, there was games stopped in between, but Dixon, certainly the match clocks wasn't restarted for a couple of phases. And I was going ballistic, thinking that obviously that was going to hold up players coming back in. But I mean, dimes, mate, the reason you lost was because your team couldn't score against 12 men with a dominant scrum. Let's be frank.
And also, I think they felt the tendency that they had to score closer to the goalpost because their kicker was struggling to kick stuff. So I think it almost hampered their attack. I think you can see it at various moments. Ollie Hassel-Collins is pushing them inwards, but I think they're also feeling the need to score nearer to the uprights so that they can make their chances better of getting the try converted. So I think that also hampered them as well. So work on the kicking skills.
Yeah, I agree. And Andy Stevens sort of does double whammy of defense, spelled the American way, but I'll let you off. So defense, he said, unfortunately linked with yellow, which I think perhaps shows the good, the fantastic defense at times by the team. But of course, as we say, some of the brainless indiscipline as well. Well, in the words of, I'm sure, a rock star somewhere, here we fucking go again. It's Leinster again in Europe. Quite away from the ludicrous scenario that we found ourselves, thanks to our European overlords, that this is one of several teams playing the same team that they had in a group before. It's a completely moronic way of doing it out of a group stage, everyone going into a pot. I have it on reasonable authority that McKellar is reasonably livid on it. You get through a group of death and qualify out of it, and your reward is to face the same opposition from the group of death. I think, you know, the alternative is we'd be playing Northampton away, which obviously would be very interesting. And I think Northampton are a fantastic team, it begrudges me to say. I'd probably fancy our chances away at Franklin's Gardens more than I would at the Aviva Stadium. Now, as I said, I'm going, Elliot's going, so you can blame us if we lose. Definitely nothing to do with the fact that Leinster have got a world-class international side. But I think there's a bit of interest in this, and I'm going to throw this to you first, Charles, because, well, I suppose the first thing actually to talk about is what team Leicester can put together, because there's doubts over Chesham, there's doubts over Martin. We're hopeful, but we're not convinced that they'll be fit. Rafael in the same boat. We know Hazy won't be there, but Coley should be fit, which is important. But if, let's just say, best case scenario, they're all sort of available, and you compare it to the England team, which did a number on Ireland, pretty much a full-strength Irish pack, which is, of course, mostly a Leinster pack plus Peter O'Mahony. And Tagberg, who, to be fair, was one of their best players as well. There's actually not a huge amount of drop-off. Maybe Genge over Cronin you'd have every day of the week, but everyone else, you know, Visa, Earl, Rafael, Underhill, you know, you're splitting hairs really with those guys. And obviously Martin and Chesham were two of England's most impressive players. Do you think there is some cause for optimism? Do you think there's any blueprint that England laid down that Tigers can follow?
No, not really, because I think that England have a completely different...
Dickhead.
I think, sorry,
dickhead.
Sorry,
I'm trying to find shoots of optimism. Yeah, good.
I think, look, all I would say, I think there's optimism for different reasons. This is a rugby match between two top-class clubs teams. Everyone thinks it's a foregone conclusion. Leicester are completely unfancied. Sometimes that does strange things. And, you know, you never know. Obviously, Leinster will get to their home stadium where there's going to be nearly 40,000 people there, by all accounts, as comfortable favourites. But, you know, it's a two-horse race and you never know. Leicester just have to go, treat this as a free hit, a bit like they did last year. You know, last year in that in that knockout game at the Aviva, I know it was sort of...
Well, they ran away with it in the last 20 minutes, didn't they?
Yeah. I know the scoreline flattered Leinster a bit, because I know there were a couple of soft tries that the Tigers let in. I remember Ringrose cutting through that midfield defence
We had Kelly coming back from injury and Potter, yes, who never played 30 or played his second ever game at 13. Yeah, that was...
Correct. Yeah. But actually... Leicester at times did cause Leinster problems. Now, I know this is a different Leicester team and everybody might not be fit and the league might be the priority. Having said that, I think they have to go full strength, because I think it could be a complete car crash if they rotate. So I think they have to go full strength. And I think if they go there, and I think regardless of the result, if they put in a really good performance and ruffle a few Leinster feathers, that'll give them real, real confidence, the first team, for the run-in as Premiership calling. I mean, what is this? Is this the fourth time in three seasons?
Yeah, yeah. I love Leinster, but I am sick of them. You know, they are a wonderful club, and I do credit, they're obviously, for good reason, resounding favourites. They are a phenomenal side with no real weaknesses. They've got class all over the pitch. Whether that class is in great form at the moment is perhaps a slightly different question, but I think it's easily...
Or great fitness, as we've just, you know, as we were discussing, the length of injuries that Leinster might have. You know, you look through some of the names: Robbie Henshaw, Kieran Frawley, Hugo Keenan, Gary Ringrose, Andrew Porter, Jimmy O'Brien, all struggling. Some of them you'd expect some of them to be fit, but you know, it could end up being a test of Leinster's depth as much as Leicester's this weekend.
Well, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? I hate to pin my hopes on the misfortune of other Leinster players, but I do hope that they look at us and say, well, it's just Leicester. We've done them pretty comfortably over the last few years, so we can give everyone else a week off for what will probably be, I think, the ludicrous arrangement is they'll play Toulouse or someone in the next round, which, of course, could be our reward as well. So we'll see. But, Jess, going into this, the word free hit is a bit dangerous, I suppose, and we should probably put a pound in the Matt Hampson fund, I think, whenever you know, one of us mentions it from now on. But the other thing that I've seen mentioned was what Charles said, which is send kind of a rotated squad, focus on the league, etc. Bearing in mind that, you know, assuming that we lose this, we've got a 2-week break anyway until we play Northampton in the league. What would your approach be? Would you kind of go guns blazing as strong as you can? Or if we're already missing key players due to injury, would you say, well, without Chesham, without Martin, without Rafael, we're stuffed anyway, we might as well give everyone a break?
Well, I would never say that we're stuffed because rugby is an odd game and anything can happen. They could all have the same bug that we'd reportedly had. And, maybe I'm crossing my fingers for that. But I would send a full strength team simply because there have been players that haven't played like Visa and Montoya for about 7-8 weeks. And they're players that are desperately in need of game time. So I would send a full strength team, not just targeting this, as Dan McKell has always said, you know, when we're in the Prem Cup, we're in the running for 3 trophies. Now we're in the running for 2. We've reached the final of 1, although it wasn't successful. But I think if that's his mantra, he has to go with a full strength squad. But I think also the team needs time to still blend together, play together, so that we are, if we don't get through in this competition, we're still in the best chances of targeting the running. I think players desperately in need of more game time. Like, as I say, like Visa and Montoya, who just simply haven't played for 7 or 8 weeks.
The other thing I would say is, and this is extremely sentimental, is that we're still Leicester Tigers, whether or not a season's been successful or not. We have got pedigree in Europe. Obviously, it's not been a while since we've won, but we always want to be a force. And I will roll over and eat my hat the day that we send a second string and admit defeat before a game's been gone. You know, the mantra of this club is that it fights for everything. And sometimes it might send over a rotated team, but with the genuine belief it can win. That's what we saw against Stade Francais. It did the job. This is a completely different kettle of fish. This is Leinster. This is one of the best teams in Europe. For me, I think it has to be a statement.
I agree. Just quickly, allied to that, I think optics and perception are really important. And I think if Leicester were to send a massively rotated squad and to basically throw this game, you know, that's not going to do a lot for squad morale. And it's also, you're going to open yourself up to a lot of negative publicity and a lot of negative criticism. And you're going to get a lot of questions from me in the national press, sort of, you know, asking, you know, is this not a good look for the competition, and it deserves greater respect than this. And it won't just be us that are writing that. You know, you've got 40,000 people who want to watch a competitive match at the Aviva on Saturday. Not that the sort of Premiership clubs have any obligation to them for that, but they have. I think there is an obligation to the tournament. I think
I completely agree, and I think
you don't want that negative cloud around you when you're in seventh place in the table. It's just you want to be breeding positivity at this time when you've got ground to make up. You don't, even if it's just a little 1%. You just want positivity. You want people to be talking about you in a positive way. You want a feel-good camp.
Exactly. And let's say there could be a lot of aggression that is deemed, as we saw from England, being written off, being given no hope. That's fine. And that's exactly where we want to be. That's where we want to be able to try and extract the most out of performance. And like you say, funny things happen. Now, in terms of how Tigers can play, I'm not going to go into... When we do Premiership, we kind of say, oh, you know, there's a bit of a weak spot here. We can do that. Leds don't really have that unless they're kind of down to their bare bones. You know, potentially the scrum wasn't particularly favourable for them at the weekend. In fact, perhaps you could see Coley looking at getting stuck into whoever his opposite number is, especially if Andrew Porter's injured. But we're probably going to ask Coley to do a big shift, but he's had a week off with his slippers on. So hopefully he's raring to go. Aside from the scrum, there's not a lot there. So I suppose the best thing that we can hope is effectively everyone just puts in their best performance that they can do. In terms of selection, I think most of the side, if it's available, picks itself. We know that side is going to be Cronin, Montoya, Cole, Martin and Chesham, if they're fit. If not, we're probably going to be looking at Wells and Hatherall again, I expect, with Hanro, Tommy and Jasper in the back row. It gets a bit interesting, I think, particularly when you get to the centre, because for me it's a no-brainer to have JVP and Pollard there. Centres, I think Leicester rely so much on Carter. He has started at 12, but who are you putting at 13? I assume Kelly's back available. He's not been in his best form. Scotty is solid, but I think has a lower ceiling than Kelly. And of course, he's a natural 13, unlike Kelly. Charles, where do you sit with that?
Yeah, I don't think Dan Kelly is a 13, but I'm not sure there is much of an option, really. The only thing I'm surprised that they haven't tried more is actually playing Kelly 12 and Kata at 13, because, I mean, Kata played on the wing for Tonga at the World Cup. So he's clearly got that sort of comfort in the outside channels in his locker. I know they like using him route one first phase, but you can still do that with a player playing at 13. You know, there's no law book that says you can't. So I'm surprised that, especially how there's been a few defensive frailties with Qatar at 12, I'm surprised that they don't mix it around a little bit, a bit like England were doing with Lawrence and Slade. You know, they were almost playing left and right, really, at times.
You could even look at starting Castro on the wing because Bassett went off injured, and having a bit more of an experienced centre partnership in Kelly and Scott. Jess, where are you with that?
I'm probably starting Qatar, but I don't know. I'm in two minds really about where to play Shilcock, because I do want Shilcock in the squad somewhere, obviously. But I've just waxed lyrical earlier on in the pod about how I want to see Pollard, JVP and Shilcock all on the pitch at the same time. So is now the time to do it? Do we start with Freddie on the wing, then have Shilcock at fullback?
Well, you've jumped right ahead of my great point that I was going to make, which I know Elliot would concur with. But I'll take it to say that you're probably happy with either Kelly or Scott at 13 and Qatar at 12. But for me, and I'd probably go with that, but I would also, I think I've seen enough of Shilcock at 15. And actually, it's interesting to see that the high balls these days are almost, it's not quite as much on the 15s perhaps as it was a year ago. We're seeing a lot more from box kicks. We're seeing a lot more, therefore, wingers having to do that whopping up, and you can obviously rotate depending on what the position is. I think that I quite like the idea of having Shilcock, who obviously is a part-time fly half at 15, offering that bit of extra width for Pollard, offering that second pair of eyes for him, and Stewart on the wing, where I think actually you can give him a bit of a license to roam and come off his wing, where he's a big ball carrier. He can offer a physical threat. You've got Hassel Collins, we know what he can do. And also, I just think that you can be a bit inventive with it as well. You know, Stewart actually is a really fine finisher, and he doesn't get enough credit for being able to finish in traffic, where he can use his size and strength. We saw it against France in the Six Nations when he played on the wing in Paris a couple of years back. What are your thoughts on Shilcock at 15, or do you think they'll go with the tried and trusted,
Charles? I think they'll go with the tried and trusted. I think they'll want an out-and-out threat on the wing. I know Anthony Watson's long-term, but I think you might look at Harry Simmons. I mean, he's been excellent at times when called upon. Out on the wing, he was excellent away in Clermont. I remember him scoring that wonder try in Clermont and Verne. I think, to be honest, Shilcock is playing... I agree, he's playing beautifully. I think he's almost, you know, pushing Pollard for that sort of starting 10 berth. I mean, I know he started away at La Rochelle and he looked a little bit frail defensively, but that is against, you know, probably the biggest pack in European rugby. And I think it's harsh to brand.
He did look quite frail against Gloucester, of course. Chris Harris.
That too. I mean, that's talking about the first phase defence again, though, isn't it? So, yes, I think for that reason, they have to start Pollard at 10 just because of Shilcock's defensive liabilities at the minute. But that's not to say that I think maybe he just needs another sort of pre-season just to put on a little bit more bulk. We've seen that with George Furbank. There are some other players across the league who are just looking to put on just a little bit more size, who are very skillful, and maybe Shilcock falls into that bracket. I think they have to pick an out-and-out winger. If Bassett's fit, I think he has to play. I think they're going to need... They're not going to be able to go there and not score a try. Like, they're not going to beat Leinster by just kicking goals. So they're going to have to score tries. I don't think Freddie Stewart is enough of a running threat or a pace threat. He'd be on the right wing. He'd be against James Lowe, one of the best wingers in the world. I think I'd keep him at 15 where he's comfortable and where he's best. And I think I'd look to plug. I hadn't even thought about Qatar on the wing and Kelly and Scott. I don't think that's a foolish idea at all. You could still use Qatar off his wing to get on the front foot. Then you've got two out and out centres there. Defensively might be a little bit more sound. And I think I'd probably actually, I'm going to be a copycat here, but I think I might actually pinch that idea and I'd say Qatar on the wing and Kelly and Scott with Freddie at 15, Jamie Shilcock on the bench, hopefully to come on and add a bit of zip. great player. I mean, back three stocks is looking a little bit looking a little bit bleak if Bassett's injured, isn't it? If Watson's injured, I mean, what a loss he is as well. Which we've heard it's long term. No more details other than that.
I remember,
or as not close to a return.
Did Watson play last year? And I think he scored a beautiful.
He did, yes.
Yeah, he had a good game as well. He looked top there as well. It's a shame he's not available, but we've got used to it now, sadly. Okay, I think you've convinced me, because Jess, I was on very much on board with actually Shilcock at fullback and Stewart on the wing. I quite like the idea. Just a complete curveball. Cass has played on the wing. He's done it internationally. He had a heck of a ding dong battle with a similar winger, albeit I don't think quite as rounded player in Van der Merwe when they played Scotland, where I think in the first half Catter knocked him over about three or four times, and then the roles reversed in the second half. So, you know, it'll be interesting if he plays in that position. There'll be some, you know, tear your hair up moments, but our scramble defence has been pretty good. So look, if they get, I think my old mad Irish coach, this is the guy when I lived in Clapham, when we had about 60 people doing pre-season sort of like drill, just screamed the words full contact. Sorry, full contact in that way. And we all just had to play basically a 30-a-side game of no holds barred contact, just because, I don't know, it got him off or something. But he did have the odd pearl of wisdom. And one of them was, look, if they get round you 90% of the time, it's a great try. I'm not going to do the accent anymore because it will be racist in the build-up to this game against my very respected Irish opposition. But he said, if they get round you, it'll be a great try. If they go through you, I can't forgive that. I can't accept that. And that was his whole thing about backline defence, was be kind of like, make them go wide, make them go round you. And if we can do that, then that's at least the first bit done. You can rely on your scramble. You can rely on the desire and all those things that we've seen in spades. And, you know, you say Catter is not a mug. He's played in that position before. And I just think it would be a complete curveball and do something completely different that perhaps they don't expect. But we'd have to ask him to be busy, which I don't think we've done the best out of our wingers from. But if you have Catter and Hassel Collins loitering around, because that was the other thing, wasn't it, against Ireland, seeing guys like Faye Wabosso, who was just ravenous for the ball. He was everywhere, you know, coming, popping up, clearing out, whatever he was asked to do, he was there. And you almost say in phase play, you say to Catter, forget the right wing. I want you just popping up here, there and everywhere. Just look for the ball, look for arms, get on it, get short balls, get round the corner and get on the ball. Let's do a prediction if we can. Usually I always go for a Tigers wing, but I'm not going to be that blasé this time. I think that it'll be a comfortable Leinster win. And I think if we have everyone available, I think that there may be a point in the game where we go, oh, it's on. But I think that we will ultimately fall short against world-class opposition. I think if everyone's available, I can see Leinster winning by 16 points, but us walking away from that with our heads high.
Well, I was going to go 15, and that wasn't just to be pedantic and to undercut you. I was going to go Leinster by 15.
There's no beer riding on this, Charles.
No. Well, there might be. I'll go Leinster by 15. I think, actually, as well, we are slightly overlooking, I think, that the game at Welford Road earlier on in the season, it wasn't all one-way traffic. You know, it did look that they had... Leinster had a very fortunate try given for Joe McCarthy arguably a double movement.
And another try off a penalty, which was never, I think it was Tommy Raphael, correct, from a clear turnover. Yeah.
But that, certainly that Joe McCarthy try came at a really crucial moment in the match. And that was, you basically felt there that if Leinster had held them out, something special, you know, could happen. I'm not saying it will have done, but there was a chance. And then Leinster scored a crucial moment, and then it sort of felt, okay, yeah, well, they're gonna run away with this now. They didn't run away with it. I know the scoreline flattered them in the end because they secured that bonus point in with the clock in the red, but it really wasn't all one-way traffic, and they really did have to work very hard. Although you did get the sense that Leinster were playing at sort of 110% and Leinster might have been at sort of 75-80. But, you know, that could happen again, and stranger things have happened. You know, many people would not have had, as you've mentioned, nobody backs England to beat Ireland. No, I don't think anybody would have backed Italy to draw with France. And, you know, stranger things have happened. It's a two-horse race. And if Leicester go with the real bit between their teeth, set the physical tone early, like Tommy Freeman did against Ireland with that Ollie Lawrence try, you know, and others, not just him, but that moment really stood out as sort of setting a physical tone. If Leicester can do that, and then the stars are going to have to align for them, but the stars sometimes do align, you know?
Thank you, Charles. I feel, yeah, and if all those align, we could lose by just 15 points. Jess, go on then, give us an optimistic, give us a wild prediction.
Wild prediction is us by 10, Tigers by 10, because we'll dominate the scrum and they won't have their full squad because they've got a few injuries, and we will be backed and fueled by desire and belief from the grinding win at Newcastle, knowing not only can we last a defence when we're three players down, but we've also got the physical fitness and mental fitness to outlast anybody at 99 minutes.
Love it. Exactly. That's what we're going to go. A 99th minute 10-point win, if that hangs on. Yeah, let's do that. And actually, just one technical bit I saw as well. Whiteley got a little bit of success, didn't he, in the home game, sort of hunting their fly half. And I hope that we, you know, effectively JVP may be given license to do the same. So that's just something to look out for. All right. So not fueled with optimism, but feeling better than I was before we hit record, just hoping for a proper effort and a display from the boys. Walk away with the heads high. Charles, that brings the end of your contribution. Thank you so much. That was a bit of a mic drop you heard in the background there as well from him. Thanks so much, mate, for stopping by again. I will catch you for a beer. Where are we going?
You will, yeah, hopefully Smith's it might be, I don't know, but it's spelt with a Y, on Haddington Road. I have it on very good authority, and I have actually been, but I have it on very good authority that Dublin locals regard it as the best Guinness in the city. So I'll see you there at some point, no doubt.
Excellent. For about three or four before you start reporting on the game, hopefully, just to get the typing fingers warmed up. Yeah, good.
Yeah, a bit of liquid courage.
Brilliant. Charles, thanks so much, mate.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Okay, that brings us to the end of this week's Rollyball podcast. Obviously, sans Elliot, but hopefully you've enjoyed the company of Charles Richardson, who's just pissed off, of course. We'll see him in Dublin. And our lovely friend, Jess Bunyard. Jess, thank you so much for spending some time with us again.
No, I've loved it. Any excuse to chat about scrums, happy day for me.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll have you on when the scrum's going forwards next time. That's an even more enjoyable conversation. Jess, thank you so much. Thank you to everyone for listening. Please remember to leave a rating and a review if you can. Very much appreciated. We'll see you next week.